Welcome to the Indian Silicon Valley podcast. I'm your host Jivraj, and on this podcast, I have some amazing conversations with founders, investors, and domain experts from the Indian Valley, trying to derive practical insights to building a startup in India. In this episode, I speak with Virender Bisht, co-founder and CTO of Neo, one of India's leading fintech startups. Neo Solutions is a premier fintech startup with multiple product lines in the market, namely the Neo Global, Neo Bharat, Neo Money, and other such products which cover multiple domains in the fintech space. Further, Virender is an extremely experienced tech professional who has had multiple diverse experiences before starting Neo. His experience stands out and is much visible by his calm nature and expert insights. We discuss a bunch of things throughout the insightful conversation, from diving deeper into the fintech landscape of the country to understanding customer focus better, from realizing the purview of product roles to grasping the hiring concepts that facilitate a fast-growing startup. This episode was extremely valuable in its entirety, and Virender's deep knowledge and experience was truly amazing to witness. I truly hope all of you enjoy the episode as much as I do. Let's dive in to the 37th episode of the Indian Silicon Valley podcast, Experience Matters with Virender Bisht. Without further ado, I would like to welcome Mr. Virender Bisht on the show. Thank you so much, sir, for joining me. It's such an honor for me to be able to host you.
My pleasure, actually, and thank you for hosting me today.
Glad to hear that, Virender. And, you know, moving forward, before we dive deeper into Neo, I'd love to hear your opinion on the eventual problem that we're talking about and fintech as the buzzword it has become in the ecosystem, right? Because you're probably one of the first guests who's going to come from, you know, let's say a fintech background per se. And in the Indian ecosystem, we talk so much about it, and we've seen unicorns come from India in the fintech space now. So what would be your opinion on the space in general? And perhaps give us a brief outlook of the problem that you at Neo are solving for and how the journey has been as of now, just to set a bit of context for the audience.
Yeah, actually, if you look, we can zoom out even actually outside of fintech for a moment as well and just try to understand, you know, where do we find ourselves in this long continuum of consumer development. So if you look from that perspective, mostly at global level, but more importantly, also in India, just because I think the size and the problems of India are very unique to us. You know, a lot of us actually are, a lot of products, sectors are finding themselves in this very, you know, space wherein consumer adoption is just going through the roof. There is an accessibility which is led by mobile, cheap data. Right now, people, even young kids of like 4 years, 5 years, they're probably watching their first YouTube videos also. So we are in this once-a-lifetime generation kind of change. So habits are changing right from the kindergarten stage. And all the way to 80-year-old people also, I mean, the way they're consuming their pension, for example, and so on and so forth, right? So I think across the spectrum of age demographics, you know, we Indians as consumers are finding this change. Given also that the delivery mechanism of either a product or a service has more or less gone digital now in a lot of sectors. And, you know, led by, as I said earlier, mostly led by the mobile and accessibility. And one of the, you know, I think across sectors also, accessibility and affordability. And when I say affordability, I don't really mean in the pricing perspective. I really mean affordability in the sense, can a consumer actually interact with the product or a service? So in that sense, you know, that mobile is a great, I can't speak enough about mobile device as a platform, so to say. And that is leading a lot of revolutionary, you know, probably revolutionary is the right word to describe this change and we are finding ourselves in. Now, just zooming into the fintech per se. So what is happening is that if you look at, IRCTC disrupted, I mean, they have gone public recently, but the story and the things that they have been doing for the last 20 years and 20 plus years now is nothing short of phenomenal. You know, if you look at ICICI Bank, way in early 2000, they came up with this whole ATM card and stuff like that. And then of course in late 2005, 2006, the stories of Make My Trip started taking shape. In 2010, the Flipkarts sort of came around. So what we're basically seeing is that category after category, the way consumers are consuming the product and services, they are basically changing. They're going more digital. Mobile is at the center stage of it. But fintech basically, was not, if this was a stock market, fintech was not really playing the bull run. So I think the time of fintech actually has come and it's been around for actually some time now. It's, and also as a sector, if you look at it within that sector, it is the backbone of the economy. It is, it is one of the largest, sectors, so to say, if you look at from that perspective. So fintech was the way people consumed, their banking services, people consumed or took loans, or people simply bought their insurances, took their pensions, kind of investment products that they invested in. All of that is actually changing. And India is also unique in the sense that it is not, like a Western model adopted in India. That's not the fintech template here. Right. In fact, in India, a lot of changes that you see from a public services point of view, they are best in world, they are first in the world, and proven at a large scale. So UPI is a testament to that. The IMPS were introduced, and now with UPI ecosystem, the PFRDA, if you look at the way people are now savings for the retirement schemes, etc. So a lot of this is first time in the world that is happening. So both the public goods infrastructure, as well as the consumer innovation, which is largely led by startups, the products which are more, near to the consumer, happening at the same time, which is something, very, very unique also. So that is where I think a lot of disruption is happening, a lot of change is happening. And that is why I think for the last, I would say 7-8 years, if not 10 years, and probably for the next 10 years, fintech will continue to be the, I think very hotly contested sector in terms of opportunities for, people who are, looking to create value in the sector, people who are looking to create new products in this sector, it will remain. That's our company.
That's wonderful to hear. I mean, you've condensed a couple of decades into an odd 4 or 5 minutes and given a very vivid description of how the ecosystem has evolved. And that was wonderful to hear. But if I may take a moment and, let's say step back and reflect on your journey as well, because by contrast, you come with a very great depth of knowledge in terms of technology. But at the same time, you've also had a varied set of experiences in terms of industries, if I'm not wrong, right? You come from TCS, then you've been in advertising, education, for some time, then Make My Trip happened. You were briefly at MobiQuick before Neo as well. So you've seen so many different industries, right? So it'd be great to perhaps get a background of your journey, how you landed up eventually as a founder after having been a technology person for such a long time. And how did these experiences perhaps help you? And, what was your frame of mind when shifting from one place to another? And how do you approach decisions in general? So basically, if you can give a deep dive into yourself, it'd be wonderful to hear. And then we can move on to a couple of specifics.
Yeah. So I think individually, I've been always wanting to look at the right opportunity, the right space. And then also for me to kind of develop as an individual and have a wider sense of, I've been just biding my time actually before I decided to basically take the plunge in 2015. So a lot of my, I think metaphorically the stars aligned in 2015. And we will talk about it in a bit. But prior to that, actually, I always looked at myself more as a technology guy and who would apply my skills at a given problem and try to basically make the impact in whatever areas we can. Early in the career, I was fortunate enough to witness some of the largest, probably the largest implementations of, both the technology front, also in terms of, impact, and also in terms of rollout across geographies, across continents, working with diverse set of people, and really get to see people who are retiring as a developer. And in India, and I started my career early in 2000s. I know the template in India used to be be a developer for 2-3 years, and then probably just rise up the management hierarchy, and just be account manager and stuff like that. And I was also maybe this is just set up for me that way, until I experienced, 7,000 miles across And my manager happened to be a person who was actually into late 50s. He used to wear the developer badge very proudly on his, on his sleeve, so to say. Mm-hmm. And I could say, yeah, this is, you know, the guy just loves his job and what he's doing. And it's a great way to build a career. You know, just being a people management and going, you know, the template of people management actually got challenged in my mind right at that time. And I said, okay, look, whatever we do, and some people, it's great. Some people can make a change to the people management. Some people will make a change to the, but it's important to basically first believe in your job, I would say, happy with what you're doing. And most likely, I think also have some impact factor in your mind that way. So 2006, I came back to India and I started, decided to basically go with a startup flow. And that was, when I joined a company which was setting up its development center in India. And we were in the advertisement background. That company, stayed with them for a couple of years, learned the, how advertisement is to be done, and digital advertisement I'm talking about. This is not like ad agency kind of setup. When you go to any website, you will see those banner ads and all that, right? How they are distributed. So great kind of science and skills goes behind that. So it was a very interesting problem and challenges, learned a lot from that industry. But the startup bug actually hit me at that time. Mm-hmm. And in 2008, then I joined another startup, more as an engineering manager. But then, I think fate had something else in store for me. Very quickly, we found ourselves in the middle of the 2008 meltdown. And struggling for funding, and then struggling to keep the company afloat, very responsible. And then we had to let go of a lot of people. But then whatever skeleton employees were left, I was kind of the responsible for the entire engineering division, and so to say. In 2010, we sold that business to Educom Solutions. And 2010, I decided to join Make My Trip. I had some great friends at Make My Trip, and they said, okay, you should just come over here. A lot of interesting stuff is going around there, and I was like shy. Okay, should I even join a big corporate? Because Make My Trip had gone IPO at that stage. But then I spoke to my manager, who is the CTO, was the CTO at them. Spoke to Deep also at that time, and they both of them convinced me that this is just the thing I should be doing, and didn't regret that. 2010, we started building the first BlackBerry apps. And if I tell that to anyone today, in 2010, we were writing BlackBerry apps, people won't believe it. But that was the thing. And then started writing the first Android apps, mobile web applications around that time. And then I was also responsible for, another thing at Make My Trip, which is basically Make My Trip is an online travel agency. So whatever flights, hotels, tickets get booked, right, they receive payments online. So we had a separate team which was looking for, the payment gateway side of it. And that was actually my first brush with fintech domain, so to say. And I used to then, as part of my job, I used to come and visit Mumbai and talk to the bankers, the HDFCs, the ICICIs, and so on and so forth. And really try to understand, because the problem that we were trying to actually solve actually was very simple. 100 people are basically convinced that they should be buying a flight ticket. For one reason or the other, only 50 would end up buying a ticket. And the reason for them is not that these people are not willing to pay. And stuff like that. This is something technology will fail them somewhere in the journey. So, and that is a problem that we're trying to find out. And we figured out that very soon that there is limited thing as Make My Trip only. We could do limited thing. Ultimately, when the person is on abcbank.com website, that's website better work. And we used to find that some building in Parliament Street actually caught fire. The entire net banking system was down for like 4 days. And half of the debit card issuers of a large PSU bank actually don't have the internet banking activated. I mean, these were the real problems, outside of what we would solve at Make My Trip and so on and so forth, right? But that's nonetheless a part of the problem. If you got to basically have any hope of improving a conversion rate, you have to work on those problems also. So, once you start looking from a problem-solving mindset, solution only is not constrained in that sense. There are aspects of, because at some stage your solution is going to touch people. So there are people aspects of the problem also that you are touching on. So that is my first kind of, with the product management and the technology at the intersection of it. And I found myself then at MobiQuick. my charter at MobiKudus were really, we had found a good use case. People needed a quick solution to recharge their mobile online. And then RBI allowed to basically have wallets as an instrument, as a store of value of smaller denomination. It's a great use case for frequent payments. And we were finding that, you know, people not just in tier one cities, but also in tier two cities, they were lapping the solution. And probably in hindsight, when I think of it, like, you know, it was maybe okay to actually have, you know, a load of 10,000 into a wallet and then use that money throughout the month, because you don't want to go through the pain of, you know, paying through your net banking or debit card, you know, every, you know, transaction. So we built that solution out. And in 2015, as I said, stars aligned. I met Prime Ventures, I met Vinay, and, you know, the three of us convinced each other that number one, it's the right time to do a, you know, a banking startup. Number two, you know, we were kind of, three of us were kind of made for each other in some sense. We had complementary skills, and Neo started actually in late 2015. Yeah, and that is also the time when I shifted to Bangalore. And then last 5 years now in Bangalore, been trying to build Neo. Yeah, that's kind of a, a brief journey of what I've been.
Wow, wow. That was amazing to hear, because as I said, you know, the depth of experiences and the reasoning you had from the start, I'm not very sure if too many people get that kind of an opportunity, but it was great to hear, and it shows with the kind of amazing product you're building. So thanks for walking us through that, Virender. And now, you know, let's talk about Neo a bit more, because I'm sure everybody's waiting for it. So I'd like to, like, you know, not going into the generic introduction per se, but it'd be great if you can perhaps give us a background of the 0 to 1 journey. Right. So if you can perhaps talk to us about the initial product that you launched, the global card, and, you know, what were you looking at? What was the initial hypothesis like? And when did you know that, you know, this is something that is working, you know, that aha moment of PMF, or what was the consumer validation like? So if perhaps you can go through that journey first and then dive into a couple of specifics, that'd be great.
Yeah, actually, Neo is also, you know, if you peel the skin and of what we are doing, you know, Neo is also a like great lesson as also how you need to keep your ears and, you know, to the ground and to really understand what is working, what is not working. Not every day it happens that, you know, the idea that you start with eventually succeeds. I'll explain to you, you know, how it happened to us. But if you are stubborn in your head about, you know, what's working, and also not opportunistic of looking at how the market is, you know, shifting out, suddenly you will find yourself in a basically very lonely boat, and you don't have customers on your side, definitely. So yeah, I think Neo is also a story of that, constantly going through one product and another, quick product iteration, seeing what is working, seeing what is not working, and generally reacting also to the market. So let me explain, you know, how we started. Neo actually was started with a very simple idea that people receive their salaries at the end of the month. And in most cases, people who are in the white collar jobs, they receive salaries towards the, you know, end of the month, last working day of the month. In case of manufacturing and some other services, you know, people receive their salary by 7th and 10th of the month and subsequent. And what we had noticed, our research actually showed that majority or a large chunk of users actually would kind of, you know, not spend, you know, towards the, from the 15th of the month to the, you know, whenever their payday was. So we said, okay, why it needs to happen? Why can't you borrow against your, you know, your own paycheck, which is bound to come? So foundation hypothesis was actually 15-day salary. How can we make it 15-day salary? And we started basically speaking, researching, you know, to the consumers, it's a great product. But there are regulatory hurdles, you know, who will give the loan, you know, if you talk to, you know, any company or employer, they'll say, okay, why should I pay 2 times? Like, you know, we spoke to many MNCs who would pay these are MNCs. So in their US offices, they will pay, you know, every other week. And, you know, and in India, they would basically pay, you know, every 30 days and say, okay, it's too much of a trouble. We do not want to go through this. So hence we thought it's a great opportunity, but also, you know, it's an opportunity, to which, you know, there is a lot of, you know, groundwork that you need to do. You need to talk to employers, you need to talk to your, you know, partner banks, and, you know, so on and so forth. So quite complicated product. And then, of course, you have to, you know, get the customers also on your side and so on and so forth. So ideally, you know, to launch a product, I mean, this is a great idea. Till date, this remains a great idea. Unfortunately, this is not the idea that Neo is known for today. It's just that basically it has too many moving parts, basically. So what we basically said, okay, look, is let's work with the tax benefits of the product, because that's a low entry product. When I say low entry product, you could penetrate into a corporate and saying that, okay, look, I can automate your tax benefits, the flexi tax benefit that you give to your white collar. On the employee side, they were going through this hassle of consuming their tax benefit, be it meal voucher, be it your telephonic or broadband reimbursement, general reimbursement also through a paper trail basically. So it's what we basically essentially digitize the entire process, make sure that the consumption is happening from our card. And then, try to keep all stakeholders happy. We found some traction. In fact, in Bangalore, we have some of the large corporates as our customers. And because, we were based out of Bangalore, so the primary, market was Bangalore itself. And then something magical happened in, 2016, actually, when the demonetization happened. And some of our business folks who were basically coming from banking background, what happened is that, two changes happened actually as part of the same time. One, obviously, the currency notes were, basically demonetized. Currency was demonetized. That's one. Two, what happened is that there was a labor ministry passed a regulation that if you are paying anyone, whether you are an informally employed or formally employed, if you're making a payment more than 10,000 rupees to your employee, then that payment has to be done through a digital means. Now, when we found that, ironically speaking, I was actually at a conference, how to scale the business, when the other participants actually showed me, look, you guys are doing something in Neo. Here is I read the circular. What do you think of this? I was like 9 p.m. in the night that day. And I quickly texted Vinay. This sounds interesting. Can we do something about it? Then we basically started, looking at the other things. And then obviously luck would have it that we had an associate who was part of our team who had been trying to pitch this idea to us for some time. So, okay, let's get on board and basically start working that way. And we were nimble enough from a technology perspective to, quickly pivot to that product. Now, suddenly from a white collar customers, we were working with blue collar workers. They had completely different set of needs. But what would happen is that, with the white collar, it was so much of sales effort. Sales, they're all with these, right? But the blue collar, there was so much demand of the product that we had to cap. Like, we cannot issue more than 10,000 cards a month because we don't have the infrastructure, we don't have the capacity to handle it, so we effectively put a cap on basically number of customers. So here you're looking at two products, right? Company founders basically wanted to do a product. It has its own sales cycle. And there is a product basically which just arose out of, opportunity. Obviously, you want to be in the later segment. You want to basically launch a product, either reacting to what market forces or, having that, foresight of judgment of what a product would accept. But definitely, you want a product for which there is enough pull. Today, that product is been four years to that product. Neo Bharat is that product on which we have about a little shy of 20 lakh actually users, 20 lakh users, 2 million users on that. We are acquiring about 60,000-70,000 new customers every month on that platform. We have some of the largest private banks as partners, as issuers on that platform. It's going great. We hope that in this year, that product will become profitable. And then as a company, then we can also focus on a few other product lines that we have. The product was just born out of, our nimbleness to react to market forces, and then just basically doubling down on what was working for us. Is actually our flexi benefits presented as another opportunity in 2017 when we were working with the employees of the Mindtree, Flipkarts, they were our customers. And some of these users actually were using our card when they were traveling abroad. It is one another example of basically, how your customers tell you what use cases they can come up. So when you were looking at the transaction, you say, why would we use your flexi benefits, abroad? There is no reason for you to use it. But some people were basically saying, okay, look, let me load my own money. And this card actually, this product is great because it just gives me, complete transparency, complete visibility into what's happening on my, how much money I have, and I can access it, and the mobile app is great, and so on and so forth. So let me use it. And we weren't advertising on that. I say, okay, there is one use case that customers are telling us, okay, this is what probably would be, again, it's a pull factor working for me. And then, if one Mindtree employee travels, he tells his colleagues and their colleagues start using it and so on and so forth. So Neo Global then actually was born out of that by looking at our customers and really understanding what they are doing. And then obviously pre-COVID, we were going great. With COVID and everything, travel is practically a standstill. But that's the other product, Neo Global. And then when we were working with New Global, then we started getting a lot of interest from the new banking, which is the new buzzword, you know, side of it. And then, you know, we have a couple of partner banks on which we work. And that is a full stack banking experience. So now Neo has actually now three product lines. We, of course, have Neo Bharat, which is the number one product for us. Neo Banking is the infant product, so to say. And Neo Global is basically just buying for the travel to return. And we'll see from how it goes from there.
Right, right. Again, that is very, very vivid. And, you know, my observations from that answer is the fact that how you mentioned about the frugal attitude that you had and, you know, the exact startup definitions that we actually talk about in books, you've actually personified it throughout your journey. You know, you've listened carefully. You've actually iterated on that behalf. There has been great feedback loops and it's great to see the product journey that has been there, you know. And I want to probably, you know, if you can help me understand here, like in depths of how the product categories not just have flowed, but I think the features have also flowed. Because when I was doing my research, one thing that I realized that, you know, there's a community factor to it. There is a great sense of customer experience, which is something that I want to talk about later as well. But there have been iterative features as well, right? And banking is not, let's say, known traditionally for, let's say, a lot of feature-specific products, right? There have been traditional use cases and we rely on that. So if you have perhaps something to mention in terms of how closely should you listen to the consumers, because also there's this saying, right, that you can't listen to everything that the consumer says, right? So if you can perhaps give us a brief outlook of that, it'd be very interesting to hear before we move on to customer experience.
Yeah, so while I think we have been working at this, hasn't happened out of I would say chaos, or there has some thoughtful thing around it. And I think the guiding principle is one of the conversations that we had with one of the founders of a new banking back from the US. And he told us very profound thing that people don't have, you know, banking conversations while sipping beer at a cafe, or people do not have, you know, people don't tell you, oh, do you bank with them? Because I do, and they're just great over a dinner table. People just don't have that conversation, right? But people have this conversation about social media and, you know, a lot of other consumer-centric products. It's okay. So your endeavor as a startup should be, particularly given that you have chosen to work in a fintech, is to how can you basically, you know, what is that one feature, you know, what is that, you know, thing that will spark such conversation? And I think really, you know, at the center of it, when you start looking at it, what can those features be, obviously there is an element of consumer experience and so on and so forth. But I think it's about, you know, I found something. Let me brag about it. Let me tell my friends about it. This is a great thing about this product. You know, how can if as a product, if you can ego boost your consumer, then they're likely to talk about it. Whether in, you know, in their friends and family circle or on social media and so on and so forth. I think this is one thing that we have been always, there are some nifty features actually in Neo Banking app. For example, if your friend asks you money and he sends you basically a message on WhatsApp, you could copy that message and come to Neo app, and Neo app will basically populate everything for you and just enter the amount and done, and confirm the amount and your transfer is actually executed. There are basically, you know, on your homepage, some banks will show you a balance, but we can basically take the mobile phone and wave on top of it. The balance actually gets hidden and so on. So there's like some cool things to play with, you know. And then there are other things like, you know, an ATM locator and stuff like that, which are also okay. There. So we keep looking at, you know, these things. And there are some things that we talk about, but then most importantly, we also listen to, you know, customers about what they're doing. But I think the essence is something that, you know, banking is not the, you know, I would say the glamorous kind of product suite. But as bankers or as banking applications, right, I think there is definitely some scope. And I think the more, you know, it goes back to my original statement I was making about the, does the consumer want, you know, does your app lend itself that, you know, the consumer, let him think about it, let him actually play with it, because that will lead to more engagement with the product, that will lead to more, you know, hopefully the customer comes more often to the app and so, and hopefully it also gives him some talking points that he can, you know, brag about, you know, and intent, and behind the scenes is just saying, okay, well, you are not a Neo, I am a Neo, so, you know, I'm better off that way. So yeah, that way.
Yeah, yeah, I get that completely, because, you know, that these cool features, as you mentioned, like, you know, the Digi Locker for the cards, and there are so many other things that you've done so well that it was great and so fascinating to understand during my research that I had to ask you that. So glad to understand that and get that out of the way. Moving ahead, you know, I'd love to understand from you on on the aspect of customer experience, because this is one thing that I perhaps have mentioned or, you know, have observed during my research with Vinay, your co-founder, mentioning it, you also mentioning it, and a constant focus on this as a company, as an ideology in the communication as well, right? So if you can perhaps tell us that what the secret to ideally living through the customer experience is and making sure that your product is constantly thriving on making sure that customers derive great value in it. Like, how is the ideology for customer experience internally at Neo? And what are some of the things that you're doing towards it beyond the features as we discussed?
Sure. I think I can offer two, three things that we look for. So first, and I think inspiration, we always, you know, inspiration is always, you know, Amazon as a benchmark of, you know, and then, you know, Amex, and, you know, there are a few other companies also which are gold standard as far as customer service is concerned. So we basically try to measure ourselves, peg ourselves with those standards, really. And the North Star metric within our company is actually the NPS. So if we get time in any review, to just talk about one number, that number is actually the NPS. So we take that number very, very seriously. You know, we constantly look at that number and have the conversations, okay, about that number, why it is low, why how can it improve, and so on and so forth. But I think a lot of this actually, you know, gets structured over time. I think practical advice that we found ourselves working for us, and I would like to give to other also, is really about, okay, when you are, you know, 0 to 1 stage, just, I think the founders need to look at the, you know, whatever the support channel that the customer tickets, live chat, whatever, you know, I think we need to find some proxies to that, because that is where the voice of customer actually is, or the frustration of the customers are. And if you are smart enough to look at those things, chances are that you will, you'll find really nuggets to improve the product, and you know, so on and so forth. So, and more than me, actually, Vinay is a proponent of that. And we used to look at, when we launched our flexi cards, you know, we used to look at, Vinay and I, we used to look at tickets every day. We used to answer our tickets every day. Even till date, you know, we have, you know, I take out time once a week just to go through the tickets, look at the responses that are happening, and so on. So some of the early customers actually have our personal numbers also. So they call us and we don't mind taking their calls. There are some, you know, surprise calls that we do to our customers, and everyone is mandated to do those calls, particularly if you're working in product, particularly if you're working in, you know, in engineering divisions. And then, of course, as founder also, we make those calls, you know, as well. On our Bharat business, because all of this is basically working with your potential customers. So we basically go and meet them at their places also, just to have, you know, not necessarily very focused agenda, but the idea is definitely understand the mind space in which, you know, customers are basically using. I mean, I am also, there's a theory of jobs to be done. Yeah. I'm a big proponent and believer in that theory, that, you know, customers employ your product to achieve a job. And all, you know, and they have, so they want you to do a job, and, you know, so long as, and sometimes what happens, you know, because of external forces, that job is no longer relevant for them. And that is why it's also very important to keep chatting with the customers, you know, do they still need you as a product and service? And a lot of those are, you know, your revenue, your NPS, and a lot of things are lagging indicators. I mean, by the time you basically see your revenue dropping on a quarterly, you know, basis, then a lot of, you know, time has already drifted. So you basically been looking at some of the leading indicators, and leading indicators, you know, some of them will be the daily engagements, some of them will be the social media chatter, some of them would be, you know, what your customers are telling you. Unfortunately, there is a lot of noise on it in that data. Right. And so you, as a company, you need to filter out that noise and really pick the signals in there. But I think that's the one thing that actually been working for us.
Got it. That makes me remind of the fact that, you know, we had a guest on the show, Chaitanya of Wakefit, and he mentioned that both of the co-founders start their day with negative reviews and end their day with negative reviews as well, because, you know, that's the kind of customer-centric approach that they like to adopt. And it's so glad to see that, you know, as a youngster, it just reinforces the belief that if you're genuinely caring for the customer and if you're on the right pathway, you'll eventually make it. Virendra, you briefly mentioned on the metrics, right? And you spoke about NPS and the other metrics that you just spoke about. And in the other interviews as well, you've spoken at times about how metric-driven your company is, right? And at the scale that you are right now, I'm sure that is, has to be a constant focus, and there needs to be a clear pathway to that, right? So if you can perhaps touch upon a couple of KPIs that are necessary, maybe not at scale at the stage that you are, but essentially at the start, things like NPS, which are actually very essential to any business and their growth, that would be very wonderful to hear.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, you know, go for NPS, you know, the moment you have 100 customers. because then it's you need to have some objectivity around what's happening. So that there is never a right time to do that as early as possible. That's number one. And let that be the North Star metrics. The sooner you institutionalize that metric across departments, it takes some time for people to get adjusted to that metric. And the sooner you do that, better it is. But then over time, what will happen is that you will need to then also have some OKRs or KPIs framework as you hit scale. And there, I think there are a lot of literature available, a lot of, blogs which are there, which actually guide you through the, if you're a SaaS company, then there's a framework called as an 8-ball framework that is there. I can perhaps give you the link later on and you can refer it. That's the one link that we look at internally, and a lot of our KPIs are actually based out on that. Talks about that, MAU growth is not, as an example I'm giving you, it doesn't matter basically, whether you're acquiring 50,000 customers in a given month. What actually matters is that basically, what is the net customers you're adding, which basically means, how many customers are you acquiring, how many old customers that left you were able to resurrect, and minus the customers you lost in the month. And that is the net score. So something like this. A lot of this actually is already there. It's not something I mentioned that you need to do. So, that way there are some good metrics available both for a B2C company as well as a B2B company, which actually should be done. And then over time, then what you need to do is, you also need to have a good KPI framework for different departments. Customer success team would have different set of KPIs. Our product team should have different set of KPIs, and tech team should have different set of KPIs. But ultimately, I think we are all about this KPIs and metrics hold you accountable in some sense. And these are the numbers that you can play with. And when I say numbers you can play with, is really basically, you can set a goal and the teams can, set those mini milestones. And hopefully that goals basically lead you ultimately to the journey of ultimate customer success.
For sure, for sure. That's been very insightful. And I understand that, there's a lot of literature already available, so it should not be that difficult to figure out. And it'll vary from business to business, but it's great to see the focus and, as you said, small milestones, which will eventually compound towards the larger vision. So glad to hear that. Moving from there, since you have such great experience in engineering and product, I'd love if you can perhaps give us a quick cue on, the integration of, let's say, being an engineer plus having that product mindset, and how do cross teams function, if you can perhaps shed light on Neo and what the ideal framework should be. If you can tell us what lies at the nexus of it, that'd be wonderful to hear.
Yeah. So I think a lot of what we call as problem solving, I think there is a framework to do that. And namely, it is about, looking at a complex problem, isolating parts of the problem, and then basically solving each subpart of the problem in isolation, and then testing if whether that solution works or not. And then finally, basically integrating the solution one, solution to subpart one, solution to subpart two, and subpart three. It so happens that basically when you are studying, I was in middle school, mathematics, science, and, eventually when you take up, engineering, you actually solve that, intuitively that problem basically comes back to you, time and again. And you are practicing this art of basically, divide, conquer, solve, isolation, integrate. That's what you are basically, solving that. So yeah. I find a lot of, engineers, typically people who have done engineering, they are somewhat more skilled at this than, it's not that other people cannot do it, people from other disciplines cannot do it. But because engineers, it's like basically saying that, look, I've been, preparing for this marathon for, 10 years now. Then chances are that I can, someone who has been practicing for 10 years, chances are that he'll be better prepared for the marathon as opposed to a rookie guy. So that's why naturally I find this engineers, they actually, it becomes somewhat easier the moment they have this realization that, as engineers, you are basically solving a problem which has finite input, and the outputs are fairly measurable. The moment you basically, make the problem slightly fuzzy and you bring people into the equation and you have an understanding that realization, suddenly then what happens is, you find yourself in the product domain. Are your problems relevant for the customer? How do you know that, the solution that you're devising actually are relevant to the, to the consumers? How do you find more customers? How do you make sure that, the customers are not experiencing a pain? How do you measure yourself, your process? So a lot of building blocks, problem solving, then when they start applying to people, suddenly, you know, you find yourself in a product space. And a lot of, you know, engineers are able to, you know, cross that journey. So therefore, you a lot of find product managers actually have a very, I would say, background in engineering, and they have done, you know, engineering as a profession. And later on, they have also, you know, maybe written code somewhere also as well.
Mm-hmm.
That is not to say, you know, people from other backgrounds, particularly, you know, finance background, particularly people, even, you know, other background are not possible. It's just that I think you need to have some, there are some qualities in a product manager that one should be aware of. And so long as I think anyone has those qualities, you know, it's actually fairly easy to cross over, you know, from that. It just so happened that, you know, I think engineers have a higher exposure. And therefore, they tend to be, you know, more, I would say, number one, willing to take that jump from engineering to product. And they are regular, even if they are not, they understand working with product managers, what challenges are they solving. And some of them, some of the engineers do take that plunge eventually. And definitely from the other side, if you look at a product manager, product guy, you know, our expectation from a product guy is that, you know, you should be self-sufficient. You know, if need be, you should be able to look at the data. In fact, you know, the job of a product manager is far more complex, so to say, you know, because engineers typically work in a problem which has been well defined. You know, the part of the, you know, part of the ask from a product manager is also define the problem. Yeah, there are some other qualities which are very, you know, I would say, fundamental and foundational for product manager, which actually engineers lack. Most of the engineers actually, there is empathy for customers. And most of the engineers actually find it very, very hard. They have to train themselves to do this because, you know, it's a very fuzzy problem. Right. And by definition, if you give a fuzzy problem to engineers, it's like, okay, and let me first define the problem. Like, what is the problem? How? Why? If you cannot, you know, if you cannot measure anything, engineers typically are, you know, you will find them little in a tough situation.
Right.
And some people actually naturally get it. I have, Vinay, for example, in my partner and co-founder here. Actually, he's just great at, you know, just understanding people. And it's he's coming from a sales background and from a business background, actually has trained him in that. And I find it somewhat difficult. I have to really put a lot of effort in just understanding, you know, when we're talking to the customers and understanding, but he just gets it like them. So it's, yeah, I think great. That's why I think complementary skills, you know, probably that's the reason why we are so great as a team.
For sure. And it shows the greatness. And, you know, you, again, I love the, you know, candidness of thought, but I love to understand that given that you've been on both sides of the spectrum, right? So you've worked at corporates, at startups, and you've been recruited there by founders there, right? And now as a founder, you do, you know, hire at a constant pace and you're hiring all the time because any startup has to, and there's a constant demand for fresh human capital to come in. And fintech at the onset, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it looks like a discipline which requires some set of technical expertise as opposed to, let's say, a consumer product, which may or may not require one, right? I'm not trying to stereotype in any way, but just goes to show that fintech may require technical expertise. So I'd love if you can give us a 2-3 minute brief of what you're looking for in a candidate when you are hiring at NEO, and what's the culture you're trying to inculcate as a part of the leadership, building a truly global, a banking expertise, a fintech legend in the ecosystem. So what's your strategy like?
Yeah. Okay. So first of all, I think there are 2-3 sub questions. Let me take one at a time. So one is what is the ideal candidate when we are looking at? So really, that depends on, you know, 2-3 things. If you are early in your career and you are applying as a fresher or someone with, you know, let's say, you know, less than 5 years experience, generally we look at you know, the fitment for of the candidate for the role that we are hiring for. If you're hiring for a, you know, let's say a developer position, then we obviously look at, you know, what skills that you bring to the table, you know, the function part of it. And then if you are actually in the product, we don't necessarily look at that, you know, actually in hiring for product position, we don't have a bias that you should be coming from a fintech background.
Okay.
The reason is actually very simple. And I think, you know, fintech is just a way of basically saying, okay, this is what we do. And that domain knowledge can be acquired after some time if you are smart enough. So the key is basically, are you smart enough? And if you are coming as someone, let's say, a 5-year experience, have you been able to prove your smartness in any field that you have chosen, right? So you could be coming from a consumer startup company and really have, you know, really killed it at that. You'd probably be a great fit for any fintech because at the end of the day, you know, particularly fintechs, consumer fintechs, they are basically, you know, about consumers only. There are aspects of basically, you know, I think subject matter expertise with respect to how the data flows, how the backend systems are working, you know, how loans are to be disbursed. You know, it is actually for a smart person, that's no longer a barrier. You can actually easily, you know, particularly when you are joining a fintech in a startup side, you know, there is enough time for you to pick up those skills really. On the team side and the culture side, which is I think we spend also a lot of time really to understand if the candidate that we are hiring or making an offer to, is he or she a right fit to what we do. So we look at basically what values, you know, the customer has, or rather the an employee has, right? And have they shown any, you know, anything in their past experience to demonstrate those values or not? For example, you know, I ask a very simple question, okay, what was, you know, your biggest contribution to whatever you have been doing in your professional experience? A lot of people basically straight away shoot that, okay, I did this such a great thing, and, you know, that could not have been done without me. And it created such and such impact. Yeah, it's great. It's great for you. And probably, you know, it also shows the innovation that you brought to the table. But innovation is just one of the five things that we look for a candidate. So we look at basically, you know, other thing be teamwork. I would give high marks to somebody who was able to orchestrate a teamwork kind of project in which, you know, coordination was required. They had to manage conflicts and so on and so forth and able to get work done. Because in a lot of times we, you know, when we're developing a product, you know, or we're launching a product, you find ourselves in many situations where, you know, the candidate or the responsible people have to navigate a lot of challenges. So that's there. Similarly, I think the other attribute that we look at is ownership. It's actually, you know, fairly easy to actually have, you know, aha moment of, you know, this is the thing. But it takes a lot to take that idea from idea stage to the fruition stage and to actually see that idea in action. And that requires a lot of perseverance. You know, unfortunately, that doesn't come, you know, naturally in a lot of people. So, you know, we focus a lot on, you know, obviously innovation, teamwork, and ownership. These are the, I think, the pillars of our culture. And we definitely look for these qualities in a candidate that we are hiring.
Got it. That's spectacular to hear, because, you know, very key words there, ownership, teamwork, because these are things that I haven't heard too many people talk about. Like, it's, again, one of those things that people idealize, but not one of those, you know, fairly propagated things. But it's great to understand from you that, you know, you give it the due importance that is required. And also reassuring to hear that, you know, background is not what always defines a person per se. You can come from a different background and adjust yourself if you're willing to, and if you have those skills. So that's reassuring to hear for anybody who's listening and wants to, you know, let's say join a fintech startup or let's say a technical expertise place. Great to hear that. And this has been wonderful, Virender. I take a last couple of minutes to just, you know, talk a bit about you and how you have been as a founder, because I feel that, you know, as 20 something year olds or listening to this conversation, to learn from somebody like you who has varied experiences would be a treat. So perhaps, like, I'll start off with a very easy one, in the sense that if you had to describe your founder persona, right, with the tons of things that are on your plate, with the responsibilities, with the everything that you have to keep in mind, administrational trouble, priorities, innovation, product, customer experience. How are you as a founder? How do you best describe yourself in the workspace? And what are the general things that might describe your founder persona?
Actually, I think what is happening is that as a founder, you find obviously yourself in a very strange and tricky situations every day, you know, of the week. But these problems actually are not very different from, you know, what you would basically face otherwise as well, right? Like, actually, you know, like any other, you know, actually average employee, you know, in the company, I also look forward to sometimes some tasks that I quickly accomplish, because I also want to drive some quick gratification. Okay, this is my achievement for the day. I don't want to forever work on 6 months long projects. But I also understand the part of my project is also to, you know, just in the longer run steer the direction of the company. And that is, you know, something that, you know, and obviously the buck stops us founders. So, and it's a very, you know, demanding, and the more you give pressure on yourself, the more taxing it can be. But I think you have to take it. I mean, you when you decided to basically set up a company, you know, and, you know, take this plunge into entrepreneurship, this is something that comes part of the whole thing. So there is no way that you can avoid these, you know, things. I think my personality as a founder has not changed even, I think, an iota. My personality was before founding the company. I was always basically, you know, looking to create a team, surround myself with bright people, you know, listen into what everyone has, be experimentative in my approach, be nimble, not be fixated, not be stubborn on one thing or the other. In general, I'm a very easy person to work with. And, you know, and those are the, I think, the things that I try to do with my team. You know, generally, you know, I stay away from basically having a mandate-driven approach. We try and we discuss a problem, and then we discuss the competing solutions to it. We try to, you know, discuss the pros and cons on merit of it. If a lot of times we find ourselves in a place where no decision can be done, right? Because there's a lack of data. And so we decide, okay, there is a method to it. Method is an A-B experiment. Let's launch something, quickly iterate on it, and then as a team, we decide on that. I think that is the, you know, playbook that I've been trying to practice as a founder. And that is one thing that has probably changed, you know, when I look at my journey before founding Neo and prior to that.
Got it. Thanks for that again, Virinder. Like, again, some really great things. And candidly, you mentioned that you are, as a founder, as you were, as, you know, if I may call it, an operator, and that has not changed for you. You've been as dedicated as ever. And it's great to see. Like, I was going to ask you a follow-up on, you know, how you feel about doing versus delegating, because as a leader, perhaps you don't get to do that many on-deck things that, you know, you perhaps would have wanted to. And you have to perhaps, as a leader, delegate more, do more administration work and not code per se, like coding in general, right? Like, if I'm simplifying in the sense of work. But it's great to see that you've you know, still walk the talk and you work as well. Like, you know, it's not just about delegation. So
delegation is important, but then what happens is that but as a, you know, as I mentioned in a lighter note, you know, I also look forward to basically some few things that I can accomplish in a day, and, you know, quick verification, you know, just talk to someone, an employee, talk to him and understand what they are doing, you know, how what contribution they have made. And I think my larger insights are really by talking to people, really, and, you know, just help them to solve a problem, or to basically understand from them what the challenge has been. Maybe, hopefully, it will spark a conversation, and that will give you something more idea to work with. Some of the greatest ideas actually have Neo have actually not come from founders. They have actually come from the team.
That's beautiful to hear and goes to show a lot about the culture and Neo. This has been absolutely wonderful, Virinder. And, you know, I wouldn't do a good job at summarizing the amazing insights you mentioned through the episode, but I will go on to thank you before we go on to the last question, which is a fairly stereotypical one. But given that you've worn so many hats across the years and you've met with so many people, worked at so many projects, and you're building something spectacular, it'd be a treat to hear from you if you have any final parting lessons for us, the youth of the country who will go on to build the Indian Silicon Valley, as I call it. So would love to hear any final thoughts that you have for us.
Yeah. So number one, I think as an operating ground, India is a great hotbed of so many things happening. And if someone has an idea, India is a great market to experiment with your ideas. And I think generally speaking, you have, you know, the sooner you start is better. But also you should give yourself time and understanding, because you just want to start something for the heck of starting it. You really want to understand that, do you have the necessary skills to basically start it, and so on and so forth. Therefore, it's actually not a bad idea just to, you know, train yourself for that ultimate job that you are trying to have. And again, from that also, there are so many startups which are out there, which can be those training grounds for you. So, you know, if you have, you know, 5 years down the line, someone actually has an idea of, you know, starting a person, it's a great time to actually be in a startup, just see how the startup operates, what mistakes they make. Hopefully you won't make those mistakes. And fortunately, that, you know, opportunity is now available in the current generation. It wasn't available, like, you know, 10 years back. So make the most of it.
Got it. Make the most of the opportunity that India as a country has for us, and that you as a leader are enabling along with amazing people in the ecosystem. Thank you so, so much, Virinder, for your time. This has been such an absolute pleasure for me. I've loved the entire conversation and the insights, and I would like to thank you again for your amazing time that you spent today with me. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, and look forward to talking to you again anytime soon. Bye-bye.
For sure. Thank you, Virinder.
So that was it from the 37th episode of the Indian Silicon Valley podcast, Experience Matters, with Virinder Bisht of Neo Solutions. Thank you so much for tuning in. I really hope you enjoyed the episode as much as I did. I am always up for feedback and would appreciate you reaching out with valuable insights on how I can get better. The WhatsApp newsletter is very cool. Do join to receive the episode updates directly on your inbox. I will see you next week for another episode. Till then, I hope you recall. If you never try, you'll never know. Stay tuned and keep building.